What's up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing today? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You can always check out the Civic Media Daily News Podcast. Go to your local Civic Media affiliate on the interwebs. For example, you want to check it out at the AUK, you're going to go to waukradio.com and all your local news will be there. So check that out. Love having that. Today, we've got a couple of special guests. We're going to do some fun stuff, but I've got to start with, again, a wee bit of wonk for all of the loyal Maggie Dawn listeners. You may have heard a little bit of something a few weeks back about Trump having to post a nearly $500 million bond in his New York State civil fraud trial. Now, if that bouncing ball fell off your radar, not to worry. That's what I'm here for. An appeals court ultimately lowered the required bond down to, I think, $175-ish million. Significant reduction. And there was still a question of, is he going to be able to post the bond? How is this going to happen? He had gone to various lenders to no avail. And then seemingly at the last minute, someone helped Donald Trump post the bond. And then the next chapter in this saga was that the Attorney General of New York State, Letitia James, had questions about whether or not the surety company, the insurance company, for all intents and purposes, actually was sufficiently capitalized should they have to call on the bond. So there have been some filings last week, or about 2 weeks ago, I should say. The Attorney General's office took exception to the Knight Specialty Insurance Company, which is a California firm that posted the bond on behalf of Donald Trump, and basically questioned whether or not this business was sufficiently capitalized to be posting a sort of bond. And again, without the bond in place, basically all of Donald Trump's or many of Donald Trump's assets in New York State could have been frozen, including bank accounts and the like, and potentially seizing some of his real estate assets, which would have thrown Mr. Trump in quite a tizzy, I think would be fair to assume. So again, there's not like somebody shows up in a courthouse with bags full of money. That's not what happens. A bond is effectively a legal document. There's no transfer of money. But in the legal document, the surety or the insurance company that's underwriting or saying, I guarantee this, promises New York's court system that it'll cover the $175 million of that nearly $500 million judgment if Mr. Trump loses his appeal and fails to pay, right? So it's if the defendant doesn't fulfill his legal responsibilities, I, the insurance company, the surety, will pay this amount on his behalf. That's why there was the back and forth about how much should it be. Should it be the entire judgment or a portion thereof? And in return for a company doing this on his behalf, Mr. Trump pays a fee and has to pledge a significant amount of collateral. Effectively, it's somebody sort of guaranteeing a loan, if you will, right? If you don't pay what you're supposed to. And so, again, the Attorney General questioned the legitimacy of this insurance company, not whether or not it's an insurance company, but does it have enough capital? And interestingly, the guy that owns the company that owns the insurance company is a billionaire by the name of Don Hankey, which, you know, jokes here abound. I mean, I almost can't help myself. You're all screaming at your radios and phones. It's the Hankey Panky, which conjures up the Hokey Pokey. And off we go. But Don Hankey, one might want to know, how did this guy make all of his billions of dollars? Well, would it surprise you that it's subprime loans? Subprime loans And this guy is a lender in the subprime market, which basically means very, very risky loans. One, interesting. The man that specializes and has made billions in very risky loans is the one that's effectively loaning Donald Trump the money. But just a little bit more about Mr. Hanke's business. Again, very high risk, very high interest loans, lots of collateral required. And he does these sort of more quickly than you would conventional loans. And he requires, again, a lot of valuable collateral for these high-risk loans. And his myriad companies are known well in California for being basically relentless lenders, just stalking the hell out of people who miss payments by even a day, right? And this is the guy that repos vehicles. Like, that's this guy. That's the Hanky Panky.
He sounds delightful.
Doesn't he?
Such a fun guy to have at a party, I bet.
Right, right. But in any case, and they've been asked for some comments, and Mr. Hanke said, listen, I would have done this for a Democrat as well. Just, we've got reinsurance, which is insurance on insurance. And we've been properly authorized to issue this sort of bond through the Excess Line Association of New York, which is a nonprofit created by New York State that serves as a facilitator between brokers and regulators. Okay. So Letitia James asks them, you know, prove that you've got sufficient assets. And they made a filing 2 days ago explaining why the subprime lender that calls that duns people, dunning letters, that's when you don't pay on your debts and you get these angrier and angrier letters and phone calls. This guy, the subprime risky lender dude, they filed to explain why their bond is appropriate and meets the requirements in New York State. I read it, and I think they're right, okay? So that's not my objection here. All of this detail is, one, to point out that we got Hanky Panky making the loan, which in and of itself is interesting, and that the guy is a ruthless lender by any measure, right? Basically, screwing middle-class folks that have a hard time making their car loans. That's how he's made his billions. So take from that what you will. And indeed, we find out from the filing that the $175 million bond is collateralized by $175 million in cash held in a Charles Schwab account pledged to the lender, and that the lender has the right to exercise control over that account. So Trump actually put some cash up. And then they go on to say that the insurance company also maintains more than $539 million in assets, $138 million in equity, and has access to more than $2 billion in assets and $1 billion in equity, of which nearly $1 billion is cash and marketable securities, pursuant to a reinsurance agreement with its parent company, Knight Insurance Company. Okay. So the parent company is the reinsurer for the insurer, which means they sort of back the loan, the insurance, if you will, that the subprime lender gave to Donald Trump to make the bond. And when you say that you have access to $2 billion in assets and $1 billion in equity, and sort of like, well, what do those look like? What's that made up of? Because the insurance company, again, you take their, what they say they've got in assets, $539 million and $138 million in equity. That's not, I mean, it can cover the 175, but, you know, again, it's always about the details. But the thing that I found most amusing, because of course I read the, I don't know, 15 pages of this detailed filing, other than the subprime lender named Hanky Panky who gave Donald Trump the backing to make the $175 million bond payment, was that in the filing, when they're talking about this Excess Line Association of New York, this nonprofit created by the state that serves as the facilitator between brokers and regulators. Here's what they say about it. This is Hanky Panky's company in the filing that they made 2 days ago in New York State. The Excess Lines Association of New York, which acts as a service provider to the New York Department of Financial Services in monitoring and supervising the excess lines market, has deemed our insurance company sufficiently collateralized to make excess line placements in New York. All right, that's what we just talked about, okay? New York, comma, as the nation's commercial center, has long welcomed excess line carriers. Like, that's where the record goes. Do you remember what happened after this trial outcome? Don Jr. and Don and everybody going, no one's going to do business anymore in New York State. It's defunct. Everyone's fleeing. Oh, except when I need to have someone post a bond for me, in which case they will claim that their bond is legitimate because New York is what? Quote, the nation's commercial center, according to Hanky Panky, the guy that underwrote Donald Trump's bond. I just thought, I know that's way in the weeds, which makes it a perfect fodder for the Maggie Dawn Show, but I hope you all find that just as amusing as I did. Again, the differences between the nonsense that will get spouted on faux news and OAN news, and then, oh, what they'll actually write in the legal filings, two totally different things. I just want to keep that one on it. New York as the nation's commercial center. Oh, yes. Anyways, that's the New York bond story. I think that the court will find that Hanky Panky is sufficiently collateralized to underwrite Donald Trump's $175 million bond. That's that. But again, commercial center. When we come back, I'm going to talk about Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arizona, who is, his mouth is way ahead of his skis, again, engaging in some of the most dangerous rhetoric I've heard, other than that which comes out of Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump, Alina Haba, et cetera, et cetera. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to break down what Cotton's been into now. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Back in just a moment. Just about a mile from Dexter again. In them old, gotta feel like a home. When I was leaving. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to get into a bit of controversy that is swirling around Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Republican, MAGA party, I guess I should say. And keep in mind, as we dive into this, that Tom Cotton was educated in the Ivy League. I believe he's an attorney. The man knows the power of words. And the story, as it has unfolded over the last 2 days, 2.5 days, actually has to be told beginning back in June of 2020. Now, if we all hearken back in the scary, scary time machine, 2020, 2021, they're just a blur to me. But by June of 2020, the nation was in the depths of COVID. Donald Trump, I think, had yet to actually talk about injecting bleach and sun to cure COVID. I think it was before Ron Johnson suggested that, you know, a little mouthwash would cure COVID. But that's where we were. And George Floyd had just been murdered. And protests, and in some cases protests that devolved into, yes, riots, but mostly, the vast majority, protests across the country in response to George Floyd's murder on a public street corner by a Minneapolis police officer and watched over by other police officers without objection. Absolutely horrifying. And black and brown folks were understandably angry. And so were many white folks. and folks of all races and backgrounds. It was so visceral. And in many instances, as there sometimes can be with mass protests, there can be people that engage in illegal activity. And that occurred in some cities where property was damaged or police cars were burned. But there were also instances where citizens, not police, engaged with otherwise peaceful protesters. Police did this too in some instances. In Boston, a whole bunch of people rammed their cars into protesters. 139 times that occurred in Boston. People ended up with broken bones. So as with all things in our political atmosphere in these times, there's this pendulum swing, right? And I think a lot of characterizations have been made about the Black Lives Matter protests. And many of them, I think, are unfair or focus on the minority of protesters that devolved into criminal violence, which should be condemned. And people that engage in that instead of peaceful protest should be arrested and prosecuted, in my opinion. But Tom Cotton had something to say about this in 2020. And in my opinion, one of the most controversial op-eds ever published by the New York Times. And in fact, one of their editors lost their job because of the editorial, because they decided to publish it, because it wasn't put through the rigors of the New York Times editorial process. You can still find it on the New York Times website. I pulled it up today. Tom Cotton says, "Send in the troops." This is from June of 2020. And the New York Times has this now introduction to his op-ed. Because, as the Times writes, the published piece from Tom Cotton presents as facts assertions about the role of cadres of left-wing radicals. In fact, those allegations have not been substantiated and have been widely questioned. He was saying it was Antifa. And he presented that as if it was a known fact. It's not. Those allegations haven't been proven. He asserts as fact that police officers bore the brunt of the violence. The New York Times fact checked that. That is an overstatement. The essay also includes a reference to a, quote, constitutional duty that was intended as a paraphrase. It should not have been rendered as a quotation. And they go on. They make other qualifying statements. But the rhetoric in Tom Cotton's op-ed from June of 2020 is heated, to say the least. Far more heated than anything I have ever said on the radio. And that's saying something. I get my back up about certain things. I'd say I probably get most agitated when I think that people are being treated unfairly or marginalized because of who they are. And I get most heated, secondly, when politicians are engaging in performance in order to garner more power, money, exposure for themselves. But back to Tom Cotton. Phrases like, "This week, rioters have plunged many American cities into anarchy," calling it a descent into lawlessness. There's no mention in Tom Cotton's entire piece about why the protests were happening. There's no mention in the entire op-ed from June of 2020 written by Tom Cotton about whether or not there is a moment of national reflection about the social contract, the bind of trust that must exist between communities and police officers, who, as, along with the military, are the only people licensed to kill legally in this country. There's none of that. Not a sentence, not a word, not a whisper He calls it an orgy of violence in the spirit of radical chic. And he says that elites have excused this, calling it an, quote, understandable response to the wrongful death of George Floyd. That's the only line about Mr. Floyd. And he's criticizing that. It's not like, yes, we need to have an important, difficult, challenging national conversation about the relationship between police and black and brown folks in this country. That's not in there. Again, the cadres of left-wing radicals like Antifa infiltrating protest marches, again, not proven. And he basically says, we need to call in the National Guard and invoke the Insurrection Act and send in federal troops. And he says, this isn't martial law or the end of democracy, as some excitable critics suggest, comically. In fact, the federal government has a constitutional duty to the states to protect each of them from domestic violence. It's a barn burner of an op-ed. Again, people lost their jobs. I'm going to talk about one of them who later published a piece in The Atlantic and talked about how he was attempting to edit Tom Cotton's op-ed back from June. This is all prequel. It's the context. It's the framework before we talk about what Tom Cotton has said and put out on social media in the last 2 days. Because again, I can't make any sense of this in the big picture. And I think what Tom Cotton is engaging in is exactly the sort of performative politics that makes me really, really angry. Stay put, everybody. We'll be back with more after this farm update. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network across the state. We're talking this afternoon about Tom Cotton's background, the framework related to a few incredibly dangerous things that he said and posted about on social media over the last couple of days. And Tom Cotton's a Harvard graduate, went to Harvard Law School, and went to Harvard Law School, Harvard undergrad. And he's a real smart guy. He got done with Harvard in, I think, 3 years for his undergrad, which is really kind of lightning fast. But I was sharing before the last little break that he wrote one of the most controversial op-eds probably in the history of the New York Times, at least modern history. An editor lost his job over it, because the rhetoric was so incendiary. That editor, just this past January, put out an article with The Atlantic, which is a really good publication in my mind. And here's some of what he had to say. He points out Tom Cotton, former Army officer, he's the junior senator from Arkansas, at this time in June of 2020, was making the argument in exchanges with President Trump on Twitter and on his own Twitter feed that the president should invoke the Insurrection Act to deploy, if necessary, the 10th Mountain, 82nd Airborne, 1st Cav, and 3rd Infantry, whatever it takes to restore order. No quarter for insurrectionists. Just remember this. This isn't June 2020. No quarter for insurrectionists, anarchists, rioters, and looters. By the way, no quarter among military folks usually means leave no survivor. Take no prisoners. That's usually what that means. That was pointed out by conservative commentator and Army lawyer David French at the time. Cotton then said, well, I, former Army officer, two-time Harvard graduate, got my undergrad at Harvard in 3 years. I didn't really mean no quarter as we would mean it in the military. I just meant not treated kindly. Not treated kindly. I'm sorry, what?
He meant he won't give him any quarters to go to the arcade with. That's what he meant.
Right. No that quarters. Was to, it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That would have been mean of him, yeah.
Yeah, not like leave no prisoners.
No.
Right. So this editor, he's basically complaining about the fact that he got fired from the New York Times. Subject for another day. But here's what he says about the Tom Cotton op-ed back from 2020. Says, I was given the job of fact-checking and line editing. Which, again, I read you some of the New York Times commentary about Mr. Cotton's op-ed. And they said some of the facts weren't right. Things were presented as facts when they were unsubstantiated allegations. You got to make that stuff clear. That's what an editor's supposed to do. Maybe that's why the guy lost his job. But he continues, and he says this. This is from The Atlantic, January this year. Among other edits, I inserted a line making clear the distinction between peaceful protesters and law-breaking looters. Here's the line. A majority who seek to protest peacefully shouldn't be confused with bands of miscreants. Okay. One line. He goes on, I deleted several objectionable sentences and cleared up factual questions. I'm sorry, there were more objectionable sentences than what made it to print? Which tells you sort of, yeah, Tom Cotton, in my opinion, did mean leave no prisoners. Frightening. That's what Tom Cotton means. You know, if you're an insurrectionist, leave no survivor. We're going to take you out. Send in the federal troops. Protesting? Oh, has it turned into violent riots? Leave no prisoners. Send in the federal troops. Okay, Senator Cotton. Which, of course, then begs the question, what's Senator Cotton's position about the actual insurrectionist? Would it not? I mean, right? If you want to get in on this conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Here's the statement put out by Tom Cotton on January 6th. Of course, he references his statements about the Black Lives Matter protests the summer before. Last summer, an insurrection gripped the streets. No, it was a protest with rioting. Insurrections are about government overthrow. But again, not like a Harvard-educated lawyer would know the difference. Last summer, as an insurrection gripped the streets, I called to send in the troops if necessary to restore order and leave no prisoners. Let's just add that. Leave no prisoners. Today, insurrectionists occupied our capital. Hey, he got that part right. Excellent. I'm going to give him a little plus one. As if this was a law school exam, I'm going to plus one. Excellent issue spotting there. Student Cotton. Fortunately, the Capitol Police and other law enforcement agencies restored order. Well, you know, after Donald Trump slow walked it for hours and hours and hours. Okay. But the principle remains the same. No quarter for insurrectionists. Ah, it's there. Good. He put it in the statement. Those who attacked the Capitol today should face the full extent of federal law. It's past time for the president to accept the results of the election, quit misleading the American people, and repudiate mob violence. Good. I'm going to give him a solid B plus to A, okay, for that statement. So, no quarter for insurrectionists. Ah, but alas, is it surprising to note that that tune has changed? No quarter for insurrectionists has become, well, except for these people charged with obstructing a proceeding of Congress, which I'll sign on to the legal brief that Maggie discussed yesterday on the show, to have those charges of obstruction of a proceeding of Congress tossed. Yeah, he signed on to the legal brief arguing for that. That is the federal crime under 18 U.S.C. 1512 sub C sub 2, in case you are keeping score. Yeah, all of a sudden found his way to, well, when I said give insurrectionists no quarter in reference to January 6th, except for these ones, I don't remember a whole lot of caveats that Cotton wrote into his June 2020 op-ed. No. The editor that lost his job had to write that line in, that there should be a distinction between rioters and peaceful protesters. Yeah. By the way, in 2022, Tom Cotton held up confirmations of U.S. attorney nominees because he wanted the Justice Department to help defend law enforcement officers from lawsuits stemming from attacks on the federal court building in Portland, Oregon in 2020. Let me explain that. So, yes, people violated the law and were destroying government property, but in response, there were claims that law enforcement officers then violated those criminals' civil rights. Criminals in this country have civil rights. It's basically the whole point of our Constitution in many ways. So, Tom Cotton. No quarter for insurrectionists. Throw the book at them, except for these January 6th insurrectionists. Maybe not. Maybe quarter for them. Maybe dismiss the charges. You know, because he doesn't believe in lawlessness. He believes in the rule of law, which he should as a Harvard-trained attorney. Vigilantism, that's bad on you. Very, very bad. No vigilantism. Oh, wait, but then came Monday. So, first dose of hypocrisy from Tom Cotton is the repudiation of his position. No quarter for insurrectionists, especially those people that engaged in insurrection on January 6th. Yep, he walked that back. Hypocrite. He didn't have to sign on to that amicus brief, friend of the court brief. Could have just kept his signature off of it, given his strong anti-crime stance. Hypocrisy number two. On Monday, Tom Cotton, in a couple of different ways, basically called on people to take matters into their own hands and confront people protesting what is happening in Gaza who had blocked streets in Chicago, San Francisco, and Oakland. And he called those protesters criminals and pro-Hamas. Now, is it a crime to block traffic, to walk onto highways? Yeah, it is. But it doesn't make you a terrorist. It might make you misguided. You may disagree with that position. But Mr. Law and Order, Mr. I condemn vigilantism. I condemn rioters. I condemn people taking the law into their own hands in vengeful rage. No. All for vengeful rage when it comes to people protesting what's occurring in Gaza. So he put this out on social media and he was interviewed on a conservative talk radio show. And we, Anya and our production friends, thanks Calvin, were helpful enough to find some of it. Let's take that first sort of garbly gook cut and then we'll take the clear one.
I got them listed as short and long. Do you happen to know?
The long is the garbly
gook. Here we go. Yeah. Yes.
I have to say, Sandra, I agree with you that you have to get to these criminals early.
Protester. Ooh, no,
if something
criminals.
Like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. There's only usually a few of them, and there's a lot of people being inconvenienced. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
What? And the short version.
I sympathize with law enforcement having to deal with this, but I think it's time for private citizens who are the ones being inconvenienced here when they're confronted with these protesters just to solve matters on their own before the police even show up.
Let me get this straight, Mr. Anti-Vigilantism, Mr. Anti-Lawlessness, Mr. I believe in law and order, and I believe in holding people who act out of accordance with the law to account. No. So you want to counter lawlessness with more lawlessness, with you want people to have their skin ripped off their hands because people are being inconvenienced in their commute. You hypocrite. How stupid. How dangerous. Go ahead, Mr. Cotton, and condemn, if you wish, the protesters. Condemn either their reasoning, their rationale, their policy position, and the means of their expression of that, Senator. But I'm sorry, it should be ludicrous beyond anybody's wildest imagination, no matter what our political views are, for you to condemn lawlessness, to condemn vigilantism when it comes to black folks and brown folks, and when it comes to people who agree with you, then it's just fine. You are a dangerous hypocrite who absolutely knows better. And by the way, getting out of your car to throw someone off of the Golden Gate Bridge, yeah, also a crime. This is sort of the point. Absolutely unbelievable. I want to know what you think. Are you as bothered by this as I am? I just find this beyond the pale and just part of this escalating rhetoric of violence. Is violence an okay political tactic within the MAGA party? Is it an okay political? Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm personally just completely disturbed by the comments that Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican of Arizona, has made. He made these comments on Monday, doubled down on them in post to X on Tuesday. And this coming from a man who had, up until about a month ago, called the January 6th folks insurrectionists, said that there should be no quarter for those people. Now, he was in part forced to take that position because he had called for no quarter against the people who devolved into criminality and violence during the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020. And he did so in some of the most scathing rhetoric that the New York Times has ever published. But all of a sudden, that position, when it came to January 6th, folks, well, maybe not, signed on to the Supreme Court brief arguing that certain insurrectionists shouldn't be charged under the obstruction of Congress criminal statute and federal code. And then this past Monday, Mr. Law and Order, Mr. Anti-Vigilantism, two-time Harvard graduate, Harvard lawyer, Senator Tom Cotton, had this to say. We'll start with the long one again.
I have to say, Sandra, I agree with you that you have to get to these criminals early.
Not protesters.
If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. There's only usually a few of them, and there's a lot of people being inconvenienced. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
And the short version.
I sympathize with law enforcement having to deal with this, but I think it's time for private citizens who are the ones being inconvenienced here when they're confronted with these protesters just to solve matters on their own before the police even show up.
Is this now where the conservative party is gone? I mean, the conservatives that I know and have deep respect for, that I've known my entire life, would never condone this kind of language. Is this where we're at in a post-Trump or current Trump GOP party, which can I call it the GOP? I tend to think it's just the party of MAGA now, where violence is an acceptable response when you disagree. Is that now a conservative value? It can't be. That's not. This is in line with my apoplectic response to conservatives blocking aid to Ukraine. Conservatives and the Republican Party used to be the party that were foreign policy hawks, that were about law and order. Where have you gone? I can't make sense of this. I mean, I'd wager that TopCon's probably going to send out like fundraising emails based on this. Oh, I'm going to tell those liberals, we're going to rip the skin off their hands. That's a good response in a civil democracy. Why is that acceptable from a senator, no less? I just, please, someone help me understand. If you're a Republican, a conservative, you're going to go right to the front of the phone queue. If you are just as disturbed by this, if you want to share your thoughts on this, is this the bottom? Is there, can we descend further? Because none of those statements, again, the opposition to Ukraine funding, those are not conservative positions. They've never been. What Senator Cotton said would never have been acceptable in the GOP before Donald Trump. He would be apologizing. Instead, on Tuesday, he doubled down, posted a video of protesters in France getting basically physically drug off a street by another citizen. It's not okay. Mark from Prairie du Sac, what do you have to say?
It's pretty disgusting. It's pretty disturbing. I mean, that my opinion was is that when those protesters, none of those protesters should have left the Capitol except under arrest. I mean, that they should have been all arrested on January 6th, departing the building. But Trump didn't deploy the forces that were, you know, that we would have needed to do that. I mean, and for Tom Cotton to excuse this kind of thing, I mean, images dart through my mind is that, what about the events in Little Rock when they integrated the schools there, when the protesters were there? They had to have National Guard troops. What would his opinion have been if the National Guard troops would have said, well, we got scared by these angry protesters that were there and just started shooting the protesters that were there for protesting the black students entering the school? I mean, or the bridge in Selma, that all those, you know, that he just said, oh, call it the tanks and just drive all those people off the bridge.
Well, it seems to be entirely situational, which isn't the point. The term civil disobedience, has Tom Cotton heard of it? We cannot have our values and our principles as Americans be situational. We cannot demand grace. We cannot demand quarter only for those that are like us, believe like us, and think like us. Our values and principles as Wisconsinites and Americans are only truly our values and principles when we defend them as they are applied to those that we think are totally wrong, that we completely disagree with, that we think may in fact be reprehensible. That is the morality of democracy, that it demands equal treatment under the law, that we do not have situationally applied legal systems or enforcement of the laws. Now, everyone agrees that the legal system isn't always fair. It isn't always just. But that does not mean that we abandon that ideal, that we stop striving for that. And it certainly cannot be that we would accept rhetoric of violence from any of our political leadership, least of all a former president, and certainly not a senator named Tom Cotton from Arkansas. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to be back with more after the top of the hour's weather, news, and sports. Don't go anywhere. I got a special guest coming up. You won't want to miss it.